Horses with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three. At the races, and I mentioned that Chris Block has got is the third trainer of the morning that won a stake on Saturday and has got a runner in the Mardi Gras, and Chris Block is turning into the Chris Carter of Fairgrounds trainers. All he does is win stakes. Chris has got two wins on the year, only 14 starters, and they're both stake wins. Chris, well done.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it.
It had to be. It just shows you what a roller coaster, the game is, the industry is. Here's Charlie's Penny. You got to be so excited about moving toward Oaks with her, and she has to scratch with a with a minor injury, and then you turn around and you win the Fairgrounds Stakes with the Captivating Moon at a huge price.
Yeah, it just goes to show you how up and down the business it is. At the beginning of the week, I was just, we were all set back by the issue that Charlie came up with and the unfortunate timing. It's never good timing in this business. I mean, there never seems to be a good time, but we were certainly, my crew and myself and Mr. Lothenbach and Mr. Nardiello, we were all keyed up about trying the Rachel Alexandra, going up against Brad and Steve and Mark's filly, and Brandon's filly ran big, and I was looking forward to our chances. I thought she was coming into it the right way. The Silver Bullet Day set her up nice for it, and she came up with an issue that certainly would not permit us to run. So we doing right by her, and going to give her some time off, and Mother Nature and time will heal what's there, and we'll be back in the late summer, early fall. Ready to get back at it with her. But it was a setback, and certainly very disappointing, but Captivating Moon stepped up on Saturday and made things a lot better for us all.
We'll talk about the win in a minute. I it's funny because the articles that covered, Marcus reported it for DRF, and it didn't specify, but I kind of speculated just based on the timing, it felt like a bone bruising kind of thing.
Yeah, actually, Steve, what it is the shin that came up on her.
Wow.
She'd run, she'd run already four or five times and no issues, and early, usually those shins pop up before they run their first start or soon after their first, and you kind of think, boy, we're fine, going forward. And
yeah,
and this come up out of the blue, and so we took a radiograph, and it's not something we want to try to go forward with. We got to take care of it now, get it behind us, and have a much stronger and better horse going forward, going after she's had some time off.
Yeah. That's crazy for the three-year-old with a little bit of a record. Well, certainly if there's going to be interruptions, better have had her already, win a stake. She's already got the black type, and no matter what, that's there on her record. When it comes to Captivating Moon, one thing that I went back afterward, dive into this. I went back afterward. This was a horse that on the sheets, on Thoroughgraph, Chris, absolutely was playable, and just gets lost in the shuffle. And for me, whenever there's a horse cross entered, I don't know if there's a mental block, I don't know. I realized afterward that I kind of glossed over him, and that was one of those stow tub, toe stubbing kinds of things that you feel dopey afterward, because there was plenty of paper for him to be competitive.
Well, yeah, and I I'll be honest with you. You're not talking to the trainer that thought he was running on the grass or hoping he's going to run on grass. I was actually hoping that the race would come off and we'd be on the dirt, And because I've gotten into this mindset that, you know, I think he's better on dirt. Well, it goes to show you how much I really know, because he showed up big on Saturday. The things, though, that I did know going into it, if you go back, and I look, I'm not a guy that plays the sheets or looks at the sheets a whole lot. I just look at the PP and know what my horse is capable of doing. And he's always run very, very well on grass. He's always run very, very well on soft grass. And I think I said this to Joe Krustafek after the race. If you go back and look at his race in the American Turf as a three-year-old, it was just a deluge at Churchill Derby Day that day. And the turf was a total bog. And he plowed through it and came with a big run, the dead heat for second that day. So I knew that however soft it was, he would handle it. And but he's not been in the best of form. I think that maybe a little change of venue maybe helped him out a lot on Saturday. I think he was kind of in a rut of some sort. And I knew going up the backstretch with Marcelino, even though he's in last, he was underneath Marcelino, and I could see he was traveling really well. And the thing about Moon is at the fairgrounds is I've often seen him kind of stall out around the turn and maybe lose a little ground. And when he made it through the turn without that happening, I really thought that he'd come with a big run. And then when Marcelino pushed him to the outside, I could see he was really starting to pick up a head of steam. One of my pet peeves is I can't stand to have a horse on its left lead coming down the lane, but he was on it, and I know Marcelino thought he was traveling well enough that he didn't want to try to set him off balance there to try to get him over. He did switch to his right lead late in the race, but he did all that on his left lead, and I think that makes it a little bit more impressive. But he looked like the old Captivating Moon that I've been looking for quite some time. So it was really, really rewarding to see how he ran on Saturday.
You know, he comes in as a $500,000 winner, and Lothenbach homebred by Malibu Moon. He's a six-year-old now, and the first win since the Diliberto, which happened to have been an off-the-turf run, and you know, that goes back to 19. Kind of interesting. I mean, it's funny, had Michelle Lovell on earlier, and, you know, when it comes to her win, with Just Might, kind of a similar record, you know, a horse that with a lot of placements and regularly competitive, but a little bit of little wind shy. And so, you know, sometimes in her case, it's, you know, an off the turf score and he runs his career best race. And for Captivating Moon, you know, essentially, if you want to use Byers, he basically equals his career top with that performance.
Yeah, I think his prior to Saturday was the race, the opening verse there at Churchill. I think he had a 97 in there. And I think we talked about this the last time, that maybe he's better around one turn. That's why I entered him in the sprint, is that, and I knew 5.5 was probably a bit short for him. But I was just looking for something to where I could say, okay, he's made a move forward, rather than just go around there in neutral like he'd had been doing. So, but my decision was pretty easy when they took that off the turf. I didn't want to run him 5.5 on the main. I didn't think he had any chance of catching up there. So, this business is, it'll send you in one direction one time, another direction another time. Here I am thinking that prior to the race, if he doesn't show up today, I'm going to have to freshen this guy up and get him to one turn some way, somehow. And what's he do? He goes out there and wins this race nicely. So, you know, I've got my mindset set toward something else, and which would be two turns on the turf back to where he was originally in the early part of his career.
Well, this is a big win. Grade three, and you know, he's a full mature adult horse. He's 6 years old, so whatever he can add now, you know, who knows? watching, keep tabs on where he goes from here. But a nice win, and for those that included him, made all the difference in terms of how people were able to negotiate the late action. I mean, the late pick four paid $600, and the pick five paid $2,300, and those numbers were because of him, because the rest of the sequence was formful. So Captivating Moon made some fans out there, undoubtedly, Chris. I got to ask you, too, before we go, winning envelope, what's the status if the Mardi Gras comes off tomorrow?
Oh, I do not intend to run. I mean, she's certainly found her niche sprinting on grass. I think she can go two turns on grass too, but it looks like to me her better races are around one turn on grass. And it would be nice if they ran, because if it was safe and that, and I know they won't take a chance if it's not, and it doesn't look good because of the weather. But she does love a really soft turf like Moon. So if it were soft and we ran, I'd feel good about that. But if it comes off, which it looks like it probably will, no, we'll wait for we'll wait for another day when conditions are better.
How about with Let's Skedaddle, who has ran okay in that off the turf race in December?
Yeah, we'll go ahead and run off the turf tomorrow with her. That was actually a little better race than it shows on paper. She's a little wide, and Florent got off of her and said that, you know, hey, don't be bashful to run her back on the main. I thought she ran well enough. So she's coming into the race real good. Seems real real content and happy and forwardly training. So we'll definitely go ahead and run. Look forward to running her.
Nice. Let's Skedaddle, another Lothenback product, homebred, the Quality Road. Out of No Retreat, the War Chant mare, and this is one of those Minnesota breds that we get a kick out of in open company. So Let's Skedaddle, it's a cute name, and the mare, I don't remember No Retreat.
No, I don't think No Retreat. She was not a stakes winner, but she was. I think she was an allowance winner a couple times, and. Has started off her career as a broodmare doing okay. I think this filly actually will do well with some maturity. She's shown plenty early enough here. If you go back to a race at Keeneland, she had a really troubled trip there and was third. With a better trip, I think she might have won that day. But I think that... when she gets some age underneath her, she's going to turn into a really nice filly. Certainly be very competitive up in Minnesota at Minnesota bred races if she continues to move forward, which I think she will.
Nice. I should also ask, actually, because yesterday you gave a little blowout to the amusingly named Wile E. Peyote, the Tim Keeley's Illinois bred by City Zip, and the six-year-old gelding comes back on Saturday.
Yeah, he ran a really big race in his last start, and is doing well. And we let him stretch his legs a little yesterday, and I'm hoping that he can move forward off of that race. It's a little quick back, but he seemed to have bounced back out of his last race in good shape. So he's due. He's overdue, actually, to throw another big race. So we're anxious to see what happens on Saturday, and we're trying to just kind of set him up for the Arlington meet, which he does well on synthetic and turf. So and Mr. Keeley loves to watch his horses run Arlington. So. Another start on Saturday and maybe one more before we leave the fairgrounds, and we'll roll into Arlington, hopefully ready to go.
Well, we'll save the Arlington conversation. I don't know how many times, Chris, over 15 years, you and I have talked about the status of things in Illinois, but a real uncertain future, and affects your family as well. And, you know, everybody who's ever invested in Illinois at all, in the past two decades.
Yeah, unfortunately, Steve, we're trying to gear up for what probably would be the last season there. So it's going to be. I always look forward to Arlington, and really looking forward to getting there this year. But I can tell you one thing: as I was telling Larry Revelli the other day, that last week of our last month of the meet is going to be pretty sad, knowing that that could be the last that we see of Arlington and the last chance we get to run and stable there. And it's just something that all of us that are devoted to Arlington, devoted to Illinois racing, are not looking forward to the end of that. And who knows, maybe there'll be something that will turn the tide and give us some a future there. But right now it doesn't look that way, and therefore makes it pretty sad thinking what we're going into this year as possibly the last meet.
Well, I will only say, having heard something shocking or surprisingly shocking in a good way about another racetrack that people assumed was dead, hold out some hope, because you never know what's going to go on in this wacky industry. There something good could still maybe happen. So we're all going to hold out hope on that front.
Yeah, I am. I can tell you that it's home here for us, and it's where I cut my teeth in the industry, and it's where my family is. And so, I'm not giving up the ship by any means, but because I want to see, I'd love to hear some announcement that it's going to press forward. And personally, I'd like to see the racing board step in and start asking some real tough questions to the management. Not so much the management, but the brass shield to give us some idea what's going to happen. I think we're all deserving of that, as not only breeders and owners and trainers and jockeys, but the workforce that's made its home here in Chicago, taking care of these animals. We all deserve that answer on what's going to happen, so we can plan for the future. We don't want to just be left at the last second to decide what we have to do in 2022. We know we'll have Hawthorne, but we won't have Hawthorne for an entire year. So we all have to make plans on what's going to happen when we're not at Hawthorne.
No, exactly. Well, and we'll as we move towards spring, we'll hope for for a good, positive resolution, given Arlington's place in the game's history, and as one of the real palaces of American thoroughbred racing. Chris Block, in the meantime, I suppose if you go a little longer, just winning stakes, that would be okay with the outfit.
Yeah, it sure would be, Steve. It'd be nice if I could be on here every week with you.
Well, I think actually I got to check. Maybe I don't know if maybe Cassie or you may be the first of the year, the first repeat visitor, actually. So that's pretty cool in itself. That given the situation, Charlie's Penny and now Captivating Moon. So keep it up.
Thanks, Steve. Always enjoy being on.
And I appreciate having you. Chris Block, everybody, who does a great job. And, of course, authored one of my absolute favorites, talking about breeding. Giant Oak, with the very limited, opportunities that he had before untimely passing, disproportionate amount, it seems, of success. Chris is one of Chris's really good big horses. We're going to stay right here, 20 minutes into hour three. Nick Tamaro, couldn't get to Nick on Friday, but it's a holiday Monday, and so we always hear from Nick Tamaro on a holiday Monday. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm good. You out there shoveling snow for the neighbors?
I don't think you could find a snow shovel here if you searched for 364 days a year. This is going to be a melt situation. Like we're going to be locked inside for a day because I don't think. I don't know if anybody, I will admit I've never looked for a snow shovel in Houston, and as I look out my window now, it seems like everybody's pretty hunkered down.
Is the snow, how much you ended up getting a lot less than what had been forecast?
I think it was a couple of inches. Yeah, the freezing rain started last night about 6:30 or 7, and that kind of stayed somewhat moderate until the middle of the night. And we actually had thunder snow in the middle of the night. It was full on thunder and lightning and snow coming down at the same time. I mean, my guess, and I'm obviously a total novice when it comes to this, is that it snowed maybe an inch and a half or two, something along those lines. They amended the forecast yesterday to say 3 to 5, but it definitely didn't snow that much. But I can still see the top of some grass in the grass.
Well, and I'm just looking. It is not going to get above 28. This is not melting until Tuesday.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the problem, right? And I think the biggest concern right now is power outages, because Texans are really taxing the grid down here, and ERCOT, which is the emergency center for the electricity grid and distribution, had planned on doing some rolling outages. We were actually without power for about 3 hours yesterday, thankfully, and I don't want to jinx it, still have it right now. So that's been the problem in the Houston area, and I think Austin and Dallas areas as well. So there are people who've reported that they've been out for quite a while. So hopefully, if that happens, they can they can hunker down and stay warm. This is very foreign to us, and I'm sure I've saw people with threads on Twitter talking about, stop complaining. This is a normal winter day for us, and blah, blah, blah. People from the north and northeast. And it's like, well, when you complain because it's 95, that's a normal summer day for us. So This is just a little very, very different.
Well, and I sent out that the timeline link to that interesting Space City weather story that I sent to you last night. And I read that. I mean, that's an extensive piece, and it's fascinating. And found out about a storm, a winter storm in 1895 that I'd never heard of, and is apparently, was a legendary winter storm from Mexico to Florida. I mean, I had never heard of such a thing until this, and it was Valentine's Day, 1895.
Yeah, I mean, historically down here, the worst weather we've gotten has been in February. It's always been that kind of situation. I mean, I remember being a freshman in college in Dallas, which nobody's tuning in to hear these anecdotes, but I'm going to offer it. And on Saturday, I had shorts on, and Monday night, we had a snowstorm, and Tuesday and Wednesday, we didn't have class. So, I mean, February's just been like that forever in the South. And, I mean, thinking back to some of the worst problems they've had at a place like Oaklawn, it's generally been in February.
Yeah.
So that's when the weather can really be at its worst here. And, for the people that are following along with Sam Houston and listening, I would imagine that by Saturday things will be better. I think the high on Saturday's in the 50s. It's supposed to be back into the 60s by next Sunday. This will be a little different in terms of handling the turf, and there's a pretty big card Saturday night that I was actually just working on the morning line for. But don't worry, they'll be back at it soon enough.
Well, we will talk to Chris Griffin later in the week about and Steve Asmussen was already hinting that he's got a hat full of live runners for the Texas card.
Yeah, Texas preview night. He's got a few. I set off the smoke alarm with my bacon. I knew this was going to happen. I apologize in advance. As I open up the oven to do that, I will open up the door. Great live experience for you, Steve. I apologize.
That's all right. Yeah. It makes it more human.
Sunlit Song are going to be the big matchup in the stake, which I believe is, I forget what it's called, the Houston Turf. So they're going to be the big matchup. Redditory was the Texas Red Horse of the Year last year. Sunlit Song actually was defeated by Redditory a couple of times, but then Sunlit Song won the open company Remington Green, and is actually a really, really nice horse for Mindy Willis. So that'll be the biggest matchup. The Carbon Striker, who won earlier in the meet, is back. You're going to talk to Chris about all this stuff. So, but it's a good slate of races, and there's a couple of really competitive open races on the card. So by the time we roll around to Saturday, it'll be a lot of fun.
Well, nice weekend of racing. We didn't get to talk Friday, but we'll talk about the Aqueduct opportunities in a second. I'd love for you to provide some perspective on what we saw at Fairgrounds. And we've talked to quite a few, actually, Steve Asmussen and Brendan Walsh and Michelle Lovell and Chris Block. We'll talk to Al Stahl after you. But let's work backwards from the risen star. And obviously the racetrack seemingly was aiding anybody that was part of the pace scenario. And some thoughts about, you know, what we take away from the sequence of events.
Yeah, you know, I tweeted this yesterday, and I have certainly felt this way since late November. I've never been a big Mandaloon fan, and I guess it was just sort of his kind of grinded-out win on Stars of Tomorrow Day, and then I thought he was pretty underwhelming in the LeCompte. But, you know, maybe I just have to finally give in and say that he's a slowly improving horse that's getting better with distance, and I will say that quite surprisingly, on the clock, the result held up very well when you compare it to the Mineshaft. You know, the extra 16th was done in about six and change, which is what you'd expect. And of course, the buyer figures were just a point different. So, you know, I guess it was a good effort. I was a little surprised. I think that the horse that you and I had talked about quite a bit and that we both liked was Senor Buscador to an extent. I don't think he was helped by the track profile. I do think that they're certainly going to be at a point where they need to figure out how to get Senor Buscador more involved early. He's not going to be able to drop 15 or 20 lengths out and be effective. But I think there's also a little bit of concern that he might be a one-run miler type. But, yeah, I mean, Mandaloon moves forward as the prohibitive favorite in Louisiana Derby unless there's a ship-in or two from maybe other parts. But, you know, the ranks are relatively thin right now. And as far as real, you know, the upper echelon of horse, and Mandaloon obviously is going to be Brad Cox's local hopeful because Essential Quality is going to go out of town for pretty much every race he has now until the Kentucky Derby. So, yeah, it was, you know, I'm a little surprised, as you can probably tell. I really didn't think much of Mandaloon. I think that Proxy is kind of more of an allowance type, but they obviously are major contenders now for the Louisiana Derby because that was one of the faster risen stars in terms of a buyer speed figure we've seen in quite a long time. I mean, to put things in perspective, Gunrunner got a 92 when he won the risen star. So and that was a very strong performance. I think War of Will got a 91 or 92, somewhere in that range as well.
Yep.
So, I mean, those were blowout wins. And so, yeah, Mandaloon ran very, very well.
And back to Senor Buscador, because I got to tell you, I went back and grabbed him at last night, final check of the future wager odds. He had floated up to 39-1. And you knew by the time you got to that race that the way the track had played, and even though Clairiere on the chart looks like, and also technically Maxfield, it's deceptive because you had Dinar kind of try to run off. So in terms of the way Maxfield closed, it's not really, it's a little bit deceptive. Clairiere was brilliantly ridden by Talamo to get within striking distance, but the way in which Quiñones was dealing with Senor Buscador, it was hopeless. And so I think he's dirtied up out of this, and I'm going to guess, I'll reach out to Todd Fincher this week, I'm going to guess that they'll look towards something like the Rebel instead and not think about running back in New Orleans.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I don't know if maybe one of the things that they thought was appealing about the Risen Star was the added ground. But, yeah, he feels like a horse that they'd really benefit. I mean, unless they're particularly loyal to Quiñones, I mean, they'd really be a good fit for a guy like Rosario or Irad, the really strong off-the-pace types. But it might be difficult to get him now. But, yeah, I would imagine the Rebel maybe be looking for two spots before the Derby to really prove it and being in the Southwest. For this part of the United States, that would make sense.
Well, speaking of Clairiere and the way Talamo, who takes his share of abuse, well, maybe just from one individual, I thought it was an incredible, just a perfect ride. He made every decision was the right one.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously Joe Talamo's comfort level riding at Fairgrounds is extremely high.
Yeah.
He rode very, very well. That was shown. I think that there's a reasonable case to be made that Travel Column was ridden probably a little too confidently. And, you know, there are no style points at the windows or on the trail to the Kentucky Oaks or Derby. So I think that the Florent Giroux would probably want to have that one back. That said, you know, you don't want to take anything away from the ride the Clarier got or the trip that the Talamo worked out, because it really was incredible. And, yeah, I mean, they seem to have a little, you know, nice little fledgling rivalry going on. And we'll see them probably duke it out again in the Fairgrounds Oaks, which has been one of the most productive Kentucky Oaks preps out there. I would can see them changing, you know, trading decisions for quite a while. They seem to be, as far as the three-year-old fillies go, you know, they're a little slow, but they're about where they're supposed to be, mid-80s or so on the buyer figure scale. We'll see what we're working with in terms of Dequist and those types when she surfaces in the Devona Dale. But I think the three-year-old picture as far as fillies go is still one to be developed. And as of right now, you'd have to consider Clarier and Travel Column two major contenders.
Some thoughts about the older horses. Maxfield has beaten every horse that has been put in a gate against him, and yet he seems to get some short shrift from the discerning the somewhat discerning public.
Yeah, and I think it's a matter of everybody wanting Maxfield, wanting the training wheels popped off, and I don't blame Brendan Walsh at all. You know, he's done exactly what he was supposed to do in terms of choosing the path of least resistance to the objectives that he really covets this year. And so, you know, there was really no reason to go take on the heavy heads in the Pegasus off of a December win. And, you know, now he's positioned well for the New Orleans Handicap or the Oakland Handicap, wherever they want to go. Obviously, Godolphin wants to see Mystic Guide turn out to be a real handicap horse. But, you know, I think the concern at this point about Maxfield is that, based on speed figures, he's a lot slower than Nixco or Charlatan or, you know, a couple of others that could resurface for some of those big objectives. We have to see what they do when they get in the gate. And I think that Maxfield now, in two races in a row, granted beating, you know, horses that he completely towered over on paper, he's shown the versatility that he's developed over time. And I find him to be a very easy horse to root for. I'm really not sure how good he is. But, you know, I would imagine that, I don't know how much Brendan Walsh has laid out in terms of plans, but a race like the Foster being at home is probably a real objective of his. And I would imagine that and the Whitney and those kind of races are what they aspire to be in. And he seems to be working in that direction.
Well, we'll talk some more Fairgrounds results with Little Al in a minute. That includes his maiden winner, Caribbean Caper, who was very impressive to start the whole proceedings on Saturday. And then, of course, winning the race named for his late father. So Little Al in a minute. A couple of quick notes, too, that I haven't gotten to on a busy Monday. The Gulfstream Stakes, in that turf sprint, Leinster for Rusty Arnold, kind of earned and ground away to a victory. And we'll talk to Safi Joseph tomorrow. Just a short field, obviously, and so it's not a lot to go on. But certainly Mischievous Alex, making it known that he's going to be, you know, a potentially serious sprint presence this year.
Yeah, he showed signs of it last year, and things kind of went wrong middle of the year. But after that Gotham, I think we all thought he could be a very serious horse around one turn. And you know, they seem to be getting him. He's certainly in good form right now, headed to the Carter, I believe, is the plan. And so it looks like he's going to be, I mean, I would imagine he's going to be one of the favorites in there. There's nobody in New York currently that would be more fancied than him. So, yeah, good effort there. Leinster obviously needed a comeback spot. Those were a couple of the stakes at Gulfstream. There were two stakes at Tampa. One was won by Zenden, very gamely in the Pelican, where I liked the 2 and 3, and it came in 1-7, 6-5-4. So my opinion was very, very good. the other one was won by the Goddess Alyssa for Gerald Bennett in wire-to-wire fashion. Not a particularly strong group there, but yeah, just kind of a quiet weekend in that respect. And Laurel rescheduled their races for Saturday. I think that actually is going to end up working out really well for them, because it's a bit of a thin calendar this weekend with the Southwest and Razorback and Viacolla being moved to Sunday.
Yeah, and we'll know more later today. Hammer will join us tomorrow with the details, but they're going to hope for the best at Hot Springs. The other two stakes that have to be mentioned, congratulations to the Fradkins, John and Diane, as Rombauer manages to get past that filly, Havanika, who absolutely was as game as can be. And the two of them were four lengths clear of everybody else in the El Camino Real Derby. So Rombauer, who, frankly, I know the thing came back mid-'80s, 84 buyer, but he's a dirt horse. So he managed to get through this, though. And then in Arcadia, you had the Santa Monica and Merneith. You got 9-1 for those that have stuck it out and waited for Merneith to mature. She wins, and granted, you know, a couple of other players just didn't show up in here. Hard not to love. Didn't lift a hoof. Unbelievable as the 2-1 favorite. Fair Maiden was never really involved. So it kind of left Merneith to her own devices up front, and a big big win for Edwin Maldonado and the American Pharaoh filly, Merneith.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, she'd shown obviously a lot of ability winning that race on the Breeders' Cup undercard. But you hard not to love has turned into a really, really kind of vexing horse. She just, when she shows up, she's very good, but she very frequently doesn't, and that's getting to be beyond a little frustrating at this point.
Well, we'll catch up more on those, you know, the other stakes action. 5-6 minutes left with Nick before Al Stahl joins us. And Nick, let's give everybody some ideas about the sequence in New York. It's some interesting races, but not a robust card in terms of participation.
No, it's you know, we're at the time of year, of course, where things with the ranks are getting a little bit depleted. So full fields look like 7 or 8 rather than, you know, the 9 or 10, but the stake race actually is an interesting bunch. The Holly Hughes, there's only 4 now going, with our left buck being scratched. I'm just seeing that from Dave Grunning, which will change the wagering to a great extent. I would say that I like Big Engine. You know, it obviously is going to hurt his price now with our last buck out of it. Big Engine's kind of a rail rat. You can't talk about this card without saying that we've seen one of the more extreme and pronounced speed of gold rail biases in the last couple of days that we've seen all winter, going back to probably mid-December, December 19th and 20th, there was a very, very strong inside. But it has been a very, very strong inside bias the last couple of days. You know, you could just look through and see Honorable Service nearly winning yesterday. You could see a number of horses. One of the things about a rail bias that I think people misinterpret a little bit is that rail does not equal speed necessarily. And so you'll see horses that have sat on the inside the entire way, and then they tip out around the quarter pole, and they've benefited from the bias. So it's not a bias breaker when a horse sits on the rail and then tips out 3 wide at the quarter pole, makes a move, and pulls away. And I will say that I've not always been the biggest fan of his, but Eric Consell has ridden amazingly well the last couple of days. And what has he done? He's basically stuck every horse to the rail. So, you know, he did everything he could in all of those races to get it done. Look at the ride yesterday on Hammer and Amor, who he kept inside as long as he possibly could, and then ultimately split horses in mid-stretch to get the job done. But speaking of Consell, he's on Big Engine. Big Engine's a horse that likes the inside. Oftentimes we'll see with these veteran type of horses, they get glued to the rail. They just feel more comfortable down there. He's that kind of horse. Obviously, if the track profile is the same, I think he'll be very dangerous. Should get some pace to run out with Tribeca and Amundsen signed up. My boy Kate has some speed to an extent as well. So I thought that was an opportunity for a little bit of a price. The nightcap kind of working backwards, if we want to talk about the pick 5, Big Boy Mo looks like the horse to beat to me on the outside. He ran an improved race last time when dropped back in for a tag by Patrick Quick. Got involved in a hot pace. You know, the big concern for him would be he's going to kind of be stalking, and if he's 3 to 4 wide, it could be a problem. So at least we'll know by that point in the card whether things are going the same way in terms of the track profile. Mucho Sunshine would be a horse that you'd upgrade, I'd say, if the inside is still very good, as he does look like the speed of the speed. I thought the 6th race was interesting. There's a lot of speed in there, and you kind of have a runoff speed type in Step to the Bank who will ensure that there's a really strong pace. I like Notorious Flirt on the cutback. I think that the thing should set up very well. Linda Rice is good overall, 22% cutting back dirt starters at Aqueduct. Good for a break-even ROI, which you don't get a lot of those when dealing with her trainees. So I felt like Notorious Flirt was a horse that you could upgrade just a bit. The fifth is a maiden race where La Victoria is entered, and she, of course, is a daughter of La Verdad. This is the second progeny of La Verdad we've seen in about a week and a half. The first one is a filly named La Caramilla that Linda Rice trains, who's not very good. So we'll see if and La Caramilla is a Medaglia d'Oro. La Victoria is a tappet. So it's not as if La Verdad has gone to poor stallions whatsoever. You wouldn't think she would, of course. So we'll see. She's even money on the morning line. I think David Aragona really had no choice other than to make her a short price with a gaudy purchase price, $800,000 by Mandy Pope. We'll see what this horse has to offer. It's really a guessing game. She's been training down at Palm Beach Downs, comes up and gets Kendrick Carmouche, who Ty Pletcher has really tapped now as his main local jockey. I like hip number one. And we'll see if the track's playing the same way. Hip number one looks like the speed. Set a really fast pace last time before tiring, and I thought ran well, all things considered. So I don't want to trust La Victoria. Obviously, if you're playing the early pick five, you know you're going to use both of those as A's, and I would probably use Summer Brew as a backup. I really wouldn't extend myself much beyond that.
Nice. Excellent. All right. Well, Nick, we will look toward the weekend, and then we'll see. I'm going to guess that there'll be a nice cross country between Oaklawn and Aqueduct this weekend. I wonder if we'll see what they do. Maybe they'll do a Sunday with those stakes moved. Maybe they'll do a couple of days worth. I'll check in with Joe Longo this week and see what their thoughts are. So we'll look toward the weekend.
Sounds great, Steve. Thanks for having me. Apologize again for the fire alarm snafu. That means under control.
Not at all. That made it fun. Get that baby out there in the snow. We want baby in the snow photos.
We're on our way.
I love it. Nick Tamro, everybody. NTAM, NTAMM, 1215. And we'll check in with Nick at the end of the week. Right now, we'll circle back to New Orleans. It's been a New Orleans morning, as we pretty much went through almost everybody that won over the card. And Al Stahl joins us now, and it was a terrific day for Al and the barn. It started out with a very impressive three-year-old filly. Caribbean Caper breaks her maiden and gets the day started off beautifully. And then it's got to be special to be able to win the race that is the memorial for Big Al. Al, good morning. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you, Steve. It's my pleasure to be here.
Talk about the filly first. And where's this one been hiding?
Oh, we've had her all summer. She was ready to run towards the first of the year. Had a little respiratory issue. Had a little bit of that run through my barn in the month of December and into January. I was more Dr. Fauci than I was an Al Stahl horse trainer. So but we got everybody kind of cleared up, and as a result of it, the last couple of weeks our stable's really kind of going the right way. So she was fine. She got over everything she was fighting and was more than ready to run, and we were excited about her. Last work was exceptional. I mean, absolutely exceptional. So we felt pretty good going into yesterday, or Saturday.
Well, and we're looking at her. She, it was a Windstar product out of that Dixie Union mare, who I kind of vaguely remember. Check up from Zanek up and by Spitestown, $250,000 for Columbine stable. And like you said, steady string of works that actually on the page goes back to the fall. And she was certainly ready to go. It wins off by eight, going six furlongs. And the way she did it, kind of get the feeling, Al, that she'll stretch out pretty readily.
Well, she's smart and athletic, so she's got a lot of that going for her. And I don't remember the pedigree as well as I did, when we bought her, so I'll have to review it. I do know that there's some powerful siblings coming behind her. The yearling was attractive. The second foal was an attractive yearling that brought $600,000 in. Windstar's better, to top-of-the-line type of horses, so they must feel pretty good about her as a broodmare. And I think we helped get the ball rolling. But you know, we're going to take our time with her. She's not the biggest one in the world. Kind of a typical first foal. So we'll just let her get over this, whether she runs at the fairgrounds or at Keeneland. We're not just sure yet. But we're going to sprint her one more time, and we'll just play it by ear. But she's given us indication all along that she'll do a lot of things, maybe even grass somewhere along the line if she has to.
Yeah, you could see that. And, of course, Spitestown's, there's almost nothing you can't get with a Spitestown. For those that didn't hear me earlier, an 87 buyer upon debut for Caribbean Caper. So we'll look forward, you know, to what lies ahead with this one. And Al, before we talk about Dalika's win, we should mention everybody ran well. Cash Rocket the other maiden for the boys, that was a nice effort. And Mask Parade was a maiden that Marcus Hirsch mentioned as well going into the weekend. Talk about those two and their efforts.
Yeah, Cash Rocket was on the sick list in December. We had to scratch him off the program on the Super Santa Saturday in mid-December. So he lost. He got a little behind, and he ran a really good race. Last time he ran two turns, he made a little middle move and flattened out a little bit and was fourth. And then he went from one race to another in good shape. And I thought he had a good trip and fired hard and just got outrun by the winner. In the back of my mind, I have a little question about how far he might want to go, so which is okay. But he's a nice horse, sound horse, nice-looking horse. So he'll show up maybe somewhere one turn, seven-eighths, one-turn mile, or maybe in a short stretch mile at Oaklawn, being owned by Frank Fletcher from Little Rock. So, but, yeah, we're happy with the horse, and I think he's back on track. And Mass Parade is a very big, growthy, immature horse, a slow learner. Ran a sneaky good first race and had a ton of trouble going around two turns the first time in his second race. And I thought he had every opportunity stalking Todd Fletcher's horse, and he kind of wiggled and wobbled down the lane, which does not surprise me. He's that kind of horse. So more race him, I think the better he'll get. So everybody was live on Saturday, and even the ones that didn't win did run well. I agree with you there.
Yeah, two wins, a second and a third. Not a bad Saturday, and in fact, it was a nice weekend overall because you had the allowance win on Friday with Get the Prize, and Social Dilemma picked up a check as well in an allowance on Friday. Let's talk about the win though in the Al Stahl Memorial. And you know, very frequently, Al, with this kind of a situation, you know, sons and daughters, you know, make an effort to get a runner in these races. Talk about getting Dalika ready for this and then winning on Saturday in the race for Big Al.
Well, you know, things just happen to fall into place. We certainly weren't. This is the first time I've ever run a horse in one of the races. I think this is either the third or fourth edition. So, I'm not going to – my father wouldn't want me to push a horse to try and, squeeze something in. So, things just happened to fall into place. Paul Varga, the owner, and I made a plan with Dalika. She's extremely headstrong and a little tough on a day-to-day basis around the barn. And we figured she's very hardy, German-bred mare, very sound. We thought maybe we'll give her a steady diet of races and works to see if she kind of comes back to us, because she can get a little rank. And actually, I think it's kind of worked for her. She was perfectly comfortable. That's as comfortable as I've ever seen her in a race Saturday. And so we weren't thinking about the Al Stahl Memorial, you know, that much until we got close to the race day and we felt really good about our horse. And then we had a major, major weather sweat. We had some rank weather here at the end of last week. And the fairgrounds, when I left the barn after Get the Prizes cool, when he cooled out on Friday, I saw that roll out on the racetrack, and I text Paul, and I said, we have a shot to be on there. They're working hard to get that course ready, and they spread some sand out there, which is the roll and the sand are the two things that help our course at the fairgrounds as much as anything in the world. And sure enough, we ran on a turf that was way to her liking. Was definitely on the softer side of what they called yielding, actually. And she's got the pedigree for it, and she's got the the record for it. She ran well in the Mrs. Revere and well in the risk averse on yielding tracks, yielding turf. So all that, once all that got out the way, then it was time to run the race and then get emotional. And we were just thrilled with the way she ran and the ride Miguel gave her. And it was a very tactical ride. And he kind of put James Graham and that Nacho Correa's horse and fired a really, really big effort, kind of put her in a little spot and got us home. And we all grouped together, looked like a herd of cats running down towards that winner's circle area with all our group. There was about 15 of us. And everything was fine. And then when Joe Decay stuck that microphone in my face, his cap in the face, started asking questions, all hell broke loose inside of me. And, that's just the game. It has certainly made me feel like I was alive, because you can certainly turn into a robot, / machine. Being a horse trainer, just grinding away. But everything came out all at once. And my mother and my kids and my wife, it was just all at once. And it felt good, actually. So it was a wonderful day.
Well, the day had, between this serendipitous situation and Steve Asmussen and Barbara Banky winning the Rachel Alexandra with a Curlin. That part of the day was special. In fact, it occurs to me I forgot to ask Steve about Alejandro, the Rachel grandson in that maiden race. But the day had a lot of nice family and connection related pleasantries, and this certainly was one, and it's nice for her too. To add to her resume, I didn't realize she was she was something of a problematic mare.
Yeah, well, I mean, not problematic. She's just tough. She's straightforward, but she's tough on a daily basis. Like I said, she's handled this steady diet of races. And the goal is now to try and get some graded, we've got graded placing. It's time to win a grade, like a grade three somewhere. So that'll be our goal going forward for the rest of the year. She can dance a lot of dances, and we're gonna let her do it.
Well, and speaking of opportunities going forward, I do want to ask about a couple of starters, and it's been a very funny scenario today between your visit, Michelle Lovell, Chris Block, and Brendan Walsh. Chris, it looks like Chris isn't going to run a winning envelope tomorrow in the Mardi Gras, but all of you are meeting again after having big Saturdays. Tomorrow, here's In Good Spirits, Miguel Mena, and what if this comes off? Are you going to participate?
No, we're definite scratch off.
All right. All right.
We've gotten some rain, but if it gets, I don't know, if it freezes tonight, it most probably, I'd have to say it's more 90-10 not to be on turf tomorrow. But we're 100% teed up, ready to go. We'll just have to see what the call is made tomorrow. But we'd love to run her, because we're very excited about her first race around one turn on the grass. She showed a nice punch, and we think she's a quality mare.
Well, you potentially have got Naughty Rendezvous in that maiden group going as the sixth, and also maiden on the main, Abdan in the nightcap. How about them?
I have two in the nightcap, yes.
Missed that.
Naughty, we'll try to run her both ways. She seems to have matured, and the grass helped her, but she was doing things we weren't quite happy with before that, so we might give her one more chance to fall out of there and be certainly close to the lead and see how she might run around two turns against maybe a scratch down type of field. So I think she's a go both ways, and obviously Spirits is turf only, and the 2-3-year-old first timers in the last race are, an odd couple, Oscar and Felix. Abdon's a gray horse. Williams Matt looks like he's got a little speed to him, and Autumn Rage is a horse we're looking to get him running, get him leave there running, and the most I fall out of a little bit, and hope to see him come run at the end and get something out of it and gallop out strong. So they shouldn't be anywhere near each other down the backside. Hopefully towards the wire they will be.
I love it. Autumn Rage is the 5 and Abdan the 1 in the nightcap tomorrow. The terrific Fat Tuesday card, whether things come off or not, and Naughty Rendezvous in the 6. Al, oh, I got less than a minute. I can't let you go without asking what's next for that Candy Ride cult of Paul Braverman's. He's in charge. That was some maiden win. Nobody's really paid any attention to him.
Yeah, I know it. I know it. The neutral course did a little bit, but other than that, not too many people said much about it. But it was, yeah, he'd come down here. He'd been on Poly up at Canada with, I think, Reed Baker. And then I had some stalls taken away from me here. Paul read that in the form. And so he said, well, I know you don't have room for him. And I said, send him another trainer. I said, no, send him. So finally we got him down here after a race at Turfway, which he didn't like Poly. And as soon as he got to the dirt, he was all business and ready to roll. And we were kind of sneaky high on him that day we ran, and didn't know he was going to run a 91 and a 9.4 and all that kind of stuff. But he's a miniature version of Get the Prize. He's as typical a Candy Ride colt as you'll ever see. So he's come out of it well. We take our time. We'd like to run him here one more time, being a Florida bred as opposed to Keeneland. So, yeah, he's on target for another sprint before we think about doing anything else with him.
You bred, you didn't breed, you trained the mare, right?
Yeah, I trained. Steve had her first, and I had her second. And she was a great-looking mare, brought a ton of money, tremendous talent on the track, and figured to throw something that could run somewhere along the line. So, yeah, that's just a random thing. When Paul told me who the mare was, I said, oh, yeah, I know who that is.
And she
it's exciting all the way around. There's a lot of class to that horse.
She was she won the Schuylerville. She dead heated for the Schuylerville win.
Right, and then we won a really fast race on Oakstate with her. Steve had her for the Schuylerville. She ran a fast race on Oakstate. She's the one that didn't leave the gate in the spin away. She kept that in her mind for the rest of her life, and finally
the worst.
Started hesitating too much.
That's right. That's right.
I told the owners, you got to pull the plug, and they bred her and sold her, and they got paid.
Al, great job. We're going to be talking again soon. Al Stahl, everybody. Nick Tamaro, Chris Block, Brendan Walsh, Steve Asmussen, Rich Migliori, Michelle Lovell. Good luck today. Enjoy the action. Talk to you tomorrow. Lots to do at the races on Fat Tuesday.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture.